Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On Tuesday evening, WFAE, in partnership with the League of Women Voters Charlotte-Mecklenburg, hosted a forum with the candidates for Mecklenburg County Sheriff. Well, some of them, anyway. Today on the program, we're sharing that conversation. I mentioned that it was with some of the candidates. We learned late that incumbent Sheriff Gary McFadden was unable to join us due to an obligation in Washington, D.C., following the ICE activities in Minneapolis. We invited him to submit a brief written statement. What he provided was about 3 full pages, so we'll post that to our website for you to read. Also, Antoine Walker, who had just reconfirmed a couple of days prior to the event, did not show. We've not been given an explanation for his absence. All right. Well, hi. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. Let me bring up the people that are the most important people in the room at the moment, the people running for this office. And we'll start with Rodney Collins, a retired deputy chief, 30 years with the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Department. Is that correct? Ricky Robbins is here. He's a retired sergeant with 30 years with CMPD. I want to start tonight by giving each of you 1 minute to tell folks about yourself, your elevator speech, and we'll begin with you, Rodney.
Thank you so much for having me this evening. Thank you to the League of Women Voters and WFAE for this opportunity to talk about my candidacy. My name is Rodney Collins, retired Chief Deputy Sheriff of the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office, a candidate that has 30 years of experience in the actual Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office, starting as an entry-level deputy sheriff, retiring as chief deputy, which is the second highest position in the organization. My why has been very simple. I've spent my entire adult life in service of something, whether it was in the Air Force, serving my country, or serving at the Sheriff's Office for over 30 years. I have a simple platform, public safety, ensuring that the sheriff's office is well managed and well equipped, because a sheriff's office that doesn't serve you well, that's not managed well. So I want to make sure that the sheriff's office is well managed and well equipped to serve this community properly. Community collaboration, being intentional about our service to those that we serve in this community, is critically important. And then equitable and transparent leadership is that third pillar, ensuring that there's accountability from the top down. I'm Rodney Collins. Thank you.
Ricky Robbins.
Thanks, sir. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for having us here tonight. I'm Ricky Robbins, native Charlottean, grew up in Charlotte. My entire adult life, it's been in law enforcement. I started with Charlotte Police Department, the Mecklenburg County Police Department, then Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. I enjoy law enforcement. I love what I do. I love the community. I've spent my time serving the youth, serving the divisions within the department. I've worked in every division within Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. I've worked the entire county of Mecklenburg to include the 6 towns and the unincorporated area. Throughout my career, I've tried to make sure that I led from the top, led by example. I've always made sure that I take good care of the people that work for me. I make sure that everyone in the community is taken care of. I've always tried to make sure that I stayed informed and with the community. I've been at every major event that has occurred in Mecklenburg County in the last 15 years on the front line when those events have occurred. My 3 main topics and things that I focus on. The first is safety and security of the staff and the people that are in custody at the intake center, to make sure that everybody goes home. Nobody deserves to die in the jail. The second one is making sure that we retain and recruit staff. We have to make sure that we do things differently to where people do not want to leave the sheriff's office. If we can retain the people that we have, that takes care of the recruitment part on itself, because people would join your force if it's a good force, if they're supervised correctly and people like where they work. The third one is reopening the juvenile detention center. The juvenile detention center was closed in 2022. I know that we need to reopen the juvenile detention center, because our youth deserve, if they're gonna have to be in a juvenile detention center, The families need to be able to visit those youth. We need to be able, Mecklenburg County, take care of our youth. So thank you, and I appreciate your support.
So you may be able to weave some of those comments into the answers to the next couple questions, but what do you believe is the top issue facing Mecklenburg County right now at the Sheriff's Office in Mecklenburg County, and what would be your first order of business, your top priority? And I'll start in reverse order. Ricky Robbins.
Top priority right now, I think, in the Sheriff's Department would be probably staffing. And staffing, because when you don't have enough staff to do the job that's required, that takes a toll on you physically, mentally. Law enforcement is a hard job. And when you have to do twice that amount of work every day, then there's going to be problems internally, external. It works on your mental capacity to do those jobs. I know that when you change the culture of the way that things are handled on a day-to-day basis, then people tend to look at things differently. And I know that the leader is the person that's supposed to set the example. That's the person you're supposed to be able to talk to and talk through problems, not against things. People should not feel threatened when they come to work. They should feel that this is a place where they can come work and go home safely. So I know that's the main priority right now. And that's the thing on day one, is making sure that I meet with the staff. And this also goes, a lot of times we forget, but when we talk about the staff, we're talking about detention officers, we're talking about deputies, but we're also talking about the civilian staff. The civilian staff are dealing with the same problems. So this is the entirety of the department.
Same question to you, Rodney Collins.
So the first order of business that I really believe is critical to starting an administration, there needs to be a comprehensive financial, personnel, and equipment audit. I need to know where the dollars are being spent. I need to know the contractual obligations of the sheriff's office. I need to know where the personnel are assigned and look for gaps and opportunities to make sure that those positions that we have that are dedicated, essential positions, are in the right places. The other piece is staffing is a critical issue within the sheriff's office. Everything we do and how we serve this community is predicated on our ability to staff and fulfill those positions. When you're not able to do that, then that service that I mentioned earlier suffers. So making sure that we're intentional about recruiting, retention, setting that appropriate example are all things that I would do initially walking in the door, that you have to set that tone. You have to make sure that you know where everything that you're accountable for is. And then secondly, making sure that you bolster that staffing, because you can't do the job without adequate personnel.
So the sheriff oversees the jail.
Yes.
And the jail has failed to meet state safety check standards in every inspection for more than 2 years. They found inspectors have documented missed inmate checks, linked staffing shortages to outbreaks of violence and injuries. Mm-hmm. Additionally, jail population levels have increased and are likely to continue to increase in light of some of the tight bail rules set by Arena's Law, which was recently passed. And you're expected now to keep more people incarcerated for longer periods of time in an infinite amount of space with an infinite amount of workers to help. What specific steps, I'll start with you, Rodney, would you take to improve safety, health care, and conditions for both the staff and the inmates?
So with improving safety, you have to support your staff. You have to increase your staffing to ensure that units that in the detention center that have two personnel assigned, that you're not staffing them with just one person. Making sure that you support your personnel in your supervision, so that when they make certain decisions that deal specifically with safety-related matters, that you're supporting them, not undermining their authority, not desecrating the chain of command because they don't walk lock and step with things that are coming from leadership. So that is the first thing in terms of addressing safety. The other piece, too, in terms of care and overall care, you have a food service provider, you have a medical service provider, you have maintenance and all these other entities that provide support for that population. So holding them to their contractual obligation is something that's critically important to ensuring that for one, our medical provider provides the best possible care. And if they're not, it goes out for a request for proposal so that we can replace them. Same with our food service providers, making sure that they hit those staffing allotments that we pay for, that your tax dollars go to ensure that they're doing everything that they can to provide the best possible care. That is how you start improving safety as well as turning around that organizational culture. Ricky.
Yes, sir. First of all, law enforcement in general right now is short as far as staffing. And as long as I've been in law enforcement, it's always been a challenge to make sure that every department is always fully staffed. What you do is when you're not fully staffed, and what you have to do, and what we need to remember is because you're not fully staffed, you have to look at where your staffing is. Do we really need to have 25 people dedicated to doing something that's not pertaining to the safety in the jail? Do you need to have 10 people doing something in another area? So just because we're short staffed, what are we doing with the staff that we currently have? We have to make sure, and always, the number one priority is always going to be the safety in the jail. Everything else has to come second. You know, in this Mecklenburg County, there's three main things that the Sheriff's Department does, and that's safety and taking care of the jail, jail and detention center, the courts, and serving civil papers. Those are the main things. Now, the priority and the number one thing has to always be the jail, because that's where the lives are. That's where lives are being lost. That's where staff is being hurt. So we have to make sure that that's where we make sure that we're taking care of, paying attention to, and moving the resources. So because you're not at full staff, and staffing, just so you know, there's no way that any of us can start tomorrow and think or tell you that we're going to be at full staff in a year. That's not going to happen. It takes time to hire people. It takes time to train people. But what you do while you're doing those things is, like I said, you reallocate and move people to where now they're being used in positions where they're not a safety buffer, and we need to have them here to make sure that, like I said, I don't want to see any staff member hurt. I don't want to see anybody that's in the intake center hurt, anybody in our custody. So that's priority. That's always priority. And like Colin said, you know, you have to look at all the other medical and food services that you have. You always have to go back in and look and see, are they providing the best thing that we can have today? Because we use them for 3 or 4 years, that make them the best. Things change. We need to change also, and we need to make sure that everybody is getting the best quality of care, the best food, but we're also, like I said, doing our best to make sure that those things stay parallel.
Something else you're going to be contending with shortly, if not already, as a result of Arena's Law, is you're going to be housing more people who have mental problems. Mm-hmm. They may be there for a long period of time, perhaps indefinitely, but as magistrates try to figure out what to do with them.
We need to take a quick break. More from our Mecklenburg County Sheriff Candidate Forum just ahead on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Let's get back to our candidate forum from Tuesday evening with Rodney Collins and Ricky Robbins.
How do you make sure that the jail doesn't become just a warehouse for people who really should be in a hospital setting and not a criminal justice setting? I'll start with you, Ricky Robbins.
I think we have to continue to focus on on the jail itself. We have to continue to meet with judges, legislators. We have to continue to make sure that some of these crimes where we're holding people longer than we should, if there's something we can do about those people. Because like you said, the mental illness is a serious thing. And we don't want to turn our back on anybody, release them out from the jails to society, when we had an opportunity to make sure that we gave them the best treatment that we could give them, make sure that they saw the best people that they had could see. But at the same time, how safe is it when we keep overcrowding? I mean, at some point, you reach a breaking point, and we cannot just continue to hold somebody on a larceny just because we're waiting on a mental health check. There's got to be another way, another place we can take them and get something done faster. Certain people, anytime it's a violent crime, of course we need to hold those people, and they're going to have to be held as long as we can hold them. But when we have misdemeanors and less serious crimes, and the only reason that we're still having to house them weeks and months in, there's got to be something else that we can do with the courts. There's got to be something else we can do. So my job would be to make sure that I'm finding out on that level, how can I get help as far as getting treatment faster, maybe going somewhere else, or what kind of things can the courts say that, okay, yes, they need to be a mental evaluation, but does that mental evaluation mean that they have to be locked in a jail? Is that they're at a low level where maybe we could release them and put them on an ankle monitor where, okay, we still know what they're doing when they're doing it until we can do that? I mean, and I know that sounds like, well, we still releasing somebody that needs mental health, but we got to figure out where we can do and what we can do, especially the people that are being housed with the low-level crimes, and somebody to be in jail for 6 months on a larceny case, and just because it's a mental check, you know, we have to figure out where the balance in that is.
What's your response to that?
So one of the things you know as a jail professional, how you classify those in your population is so important to maintaining safety in that environment. Mental health is a concern, and it has been for decades now. When you don't have the resources available for treatment and other options. Also, I want to make a point of emphasis that the courts is responsible for how long someone is detained in our custody. Sheriff's office doesn't have any discretion as it pertains to someone being brought to the jail or how long they stay. That falls solely on the courts. Being able to leverage some of those relationships that may be helpful in times where you see, as you study your population, that if there are opportunities for other conditions of release that can be leveraged with the courts and ensuring that. But at the same time, I've seen this through different iterations over the years in my time there, that you've had overcrowding and spurts. We've built other facilities. North is another option, but it will require a whole nother set of personnel and infrastructure to reestablish that, to deal with the overcrowding that Jail Central is currently experiencing. So being intentional about those things is something that's very important, and that you have to understand as sheriff in that role, how to navigate those processes if you do have to spin up another facility and reset that infrastructure to alleviate what's going on at Detention Center Central. So that's important to make sure that we do everything that we can to manage our population through our classification process, as well as how we're managing that infrastructure inside the jail. And that does go back to the staffing point. Having adequate personnel can help to do that.
Well, let me ask a follow-up to that, because you, Rodney, said that you have to do something else. But what can a sheriff do? If it's up to the courts how long these people stay, these mentally challenged individuals stay in jail, if it's up to them, what can you do? Do you separate them from the general population to protect themselves and to protect the general population? Do people listen to you? Do you have tools? These are both to both of you. Do you have tools at your disposal, if this gets out of hand under this new arenas law, to have people listen to you?
You do, but you got a finite amount of space. So when you talk about overcrowding and things, you can go to courts and try to leverage those relationships and ask for other ways to relieve that population. Yeah. We did that in COVID, actually, where we went, we met with the district attorneys, and we met with the courts. We started a work group that really looked from top to bottom for opportunities that people could be released in that regard. So I think that has to continue, that you're always looking at your detention population through a lens to make sure that we're not over-detaining and that we're able to use that to be able to get people out of custody if they don't belong there.
The only outlet is going to be going back to the courts, because even if we were to open up Jail North, you still are going to still be combated with the staffing problems, the issues of reopening it. So the only outlet that you're going to ever be able to do is to go back to the courts and let the courts tell us how they can help us alleviate this problem. And like I said, especially these lower level crimes where we're holding people 6 and 8 months, that cannot continue to happen, especially now that you're already maxed out. And like you said, with the new law, people coming in on top of what you already have, we're just compounding the problem, and we're not getting a solution if we don't solve it soon.
So we've had these repeated inspection failures, lawsuits, a lot of media scrutiny on all of this. It's all fueled questions about accountability and integrity and oversight and leadership. We've had deaths of inmates, injuries of inmates, questions regarding use of force, et cetera. How would you handle the accountability portion of this within the sheriff's office, especially in cases involving use of force or misconduct? And I'll start with you, Ricky Robbins.
Okay, first of all, I agree with what you said. 21 deaths in the last 8 years, too many. Nobody, like I said, deserves to die in jail. Accountability starts with the sheriff and the people that you entrust to lead your day-to-day basis. You know, so when you put people in place, your supervisors and commanders have to be sufficiently trained, and they have to be supervised, and you have to stay on top of things. Because once there's a problem, you have to solve that problem and not let that problem reoccur. And somebody has to be held accountable. You have to make sure that, number one, you've been upfront with the public. Transparency means everything when you have deaths in a jail. And to say that we didn't have a death, or to delay in letting the public know it, it always looks like we're covering something up, like we're trying to fix what happened. You know, if we didn't do a check when we should have done a check because somebody's on suicide watch, we need to say, hey, we didn't do it. This won't occur again. We found out that the negligence was this person was supposed to be checked on every 10 minutes. It was an hour before somebody checked on them, and we found that they committed suicide. That's not going to happen because we put stops in place to where now we can determine if somebody's doing those checks every time. But like I said, you have to figure out what the problem is. You have to fix the problem immediately. You have to hold everybody's feet to the fire, including the sheriff. You know, the sheriff doesn't get a pass, you know, so everybody is responsible. You're responsible to the citizens of Mecklenburg County and make sure that everything is running smoothly. And not to tell the people that we have a problem is a problem in itself. Not to deal with the problem head on when it happens is a problem itself. So you deal with it right now. You deal with it with what the problem is, who the problem is. If that's the problem of somebody that's in supervisor position and not supervising, if they need to be removed, that's what you do. If it's a problem that can be corrected, we correct it. You're going to have accidents. You're going to have problems. But things, as long as you get on it when it happens, you don't let it repeat itself. You cannot say it's all right that we have a death in March, and then we have a death in May, and then we have a death in July, and we say, well, people just die. No, we're not doing our job. You know, so we need to stop the deaths. We need to stop the injuries. And we do that by doing our job. So everybody has to do their job.
Rodney Collins, same question about accountability.
So accountability starts from the top down. That's one of my platform items, meaning that I set the tone and I set the example. When you talk about failed jail inspections, there are so many things and so many layers to that. Part of that, too, is when I talk about that relationship with my providers that work inside that environment, they play a component in an inspection. When they're not adequately staffed, when they're not meeting meal times and doing the other things in terms of our maintenance, those are all things that you get penalized for when they're not done correctly. So making sure that my providers are doing exactly what they're supposed to do. The other piece to accountability means that when I set that tone, we follow rules and guidelines. We have a thick policy manual full of things that we're required to do. The jail is an accredited facility. You don't get that accreditation by cutting corners or not following rules. There are guidelines and specific things that you have to meet in order to obtain that. And you have to continually meet those in order to continue the accreditation. So when you talk about ensuring that people follow rules, that this is the expectation, setting clear guidelines, that this is what we promote in our environment. We don't take cutting corners. We don't take missed checks. We don't require people to do things that are outside of how they're trained to do them. And then we support supervision through that process. And when you talk about accountability, that we have a disciplinary process. So when you have to discipline, that you do so fairly and consistently for people not following the rules, not for personal things or anything else, but you do it for people not following the rules and not meeting expectations. That's how you fix that.
State law now requires that sheriffs across the state cooperate more closely with ICE, including notifying them that when you have people in the jail without legal status and then holding them for an additional 48 hours above and beyond what they would normally be held by so that ICE can come and pick them up. ICE has complained continually that they're not being notified. The current sheriff says, yes, they are. They're just not coming to pick them up. And Sheriff McFadden has said repeatedly that he is following the letter of the law when it comes to his relationship with ICE. So, what should that relationship with ICE be and with the sheriff's office? What should it be? And how would you change it or do things differently? Or would you change things or do them differently? I'll start with you, Ricky Robb.
Okay. First of all, let's make sure that everybody understands when they say the sheriff's office needs to cooperate or is cooperating with ICE. And what that means is mostly of what you said, the 48-hour notice, the two-hour detain, make sure that you notify them 2 hours of release. By cooperating and working with ICE does not mean that you have deputies leave the jail or on patrol, go out and assist ICE in picking up people in the neighborhood. That is not working with ICE. Working with ICE is exactly what the letter of the law says. I will always follow the law. I will always make sure that it says we will notify ICE when we have to notify them on the House Bill 318. I mean, that's what you do, but you don't put your officers out on the street walking hand in hand, picking people up and bringing them to the jail. And you have to remember the thing about the sheriff's department, the only time we will come in contact with any citizens where that is when somebody else brings them to the jail. It's not the deputies bringing somebody in. It's another law enforcement agency has actually brought them into the jail. So I will make sure that ICE is notified. I have no problem with notifying somebody. I think when we notify people, we need to make sure that we have a perfect check and balance in place so that when I notify somebody, I know who I notified, what time they were notified, and you follow through with that. And on that 2 hours before release, you make sure and repeat, hey, I contacted John Doe 2 days ago at 4:15, told him that we had A, B, C, D. Those are the kind of things that we do, but the cooperation is we cooperate all local law enforcement, state and federal, and we always will, but not to the extent of pulling deputies out of the jail or pulling deputies off the road to go out hand in hand picking up citizens. That's not a role of the sheriff's office.
Rodney Collins.
My administration will have a professional working relationship with everyone. So that is one of the key differences. I won't be out here publicly feuding with ICE or any other law enforcement entity, even though we have varying viewpoints about how we see it. And the law is very clear. That discretion is now removed. The sheriff's office has to follow the law, and it will continue to do so. In terms of making sure that we meet the requirements of that, that will be well documented in an administration of mine. I will show proof of the notifications as they should be. There will be public record to notify otherwise. So, you know, making sure that we're professional, that there's decorum intact in how we deal with other agencies is important. I think that the citizens are much better served through professionalism than to have this back and forth feud going on with any other entity.
Is this overblown? This is a Republican legislature responding to the fact that Democratic sheriffs across the state allegedly were not complying with ICE and their requests to notify them before they release undocumented individuals back into the population. Was that in fact happening? Were these sheriffs breaking the law, or were they following the law? And since everybody running for sheriff here is a Democrat, is that going to change? I'll start with you, Rodney.
The sheriff's office has always followed the law. Certain things weren't a requirement before this new law took effect.
Okay.
So in terms of whether or not a sheriff is to honor detainers or not honor detainers, that is their discretion. So, and that still hasn't changed within the law because we believe in due process. So when you talk about following the law, making those notifications and doing those things that are required, that is the job, and that you do that day in and day out without fail, and you show it through your documentation and through your processes.
We're going to take one more break. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up our conversation with Rodney Collins and Ricky Robbins, who are running for Mecklenburg County Sheriff in the upcoming Democratic primary on March 3rd. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We have a bit more now from Tuesday evening's Mecklenburg County Sheriff Candidate Forum.
Is this overblown, Ricky?
Yes. I don't know if overblown. Blowing it out of proportion would be the right way to phrase. The problem I think that exists is perception becomes reality. And if you start yelling and screaming, people start to think there's a problem bigger than it is sometimes. I think the communication was the biggest thing. And I think that when you communicate with people, if I have a problem with the way that ICE and the ICE procedures are going, I need to be talking to the director with ICE or the local superiors here in Mecklenburg County directly. The sheriff's office can be in the news, but they don't need to be the news. So you don't need to be the one out here, because people rally behind you a lot of times when you're yelling and screaming,
yeah,
but they're not hearing you. So we need to make sure that we have a calm demeanor. When I'm in front of the public, they need to make sure that I'm in control of everything that's going on in the sheriff's office. They don't need to have a doubt. And when they don't see you calm, and I'm not going to tell you that I don't get mad, but because I get mad, I don't think I need to yell and scream at everybody in here in the room. I need to know I'm mad, but you don't need to know it. And we don't help anybody by always getting them riled up. I mean, and I think we always fight for what's right. And when we don't, I think that's wrong, but it's the manner in which we do it.
So Sheriff McFadden, who could not be with us tonight, closed the Mecklenburg County Juvenile Detention Facility because of lack of staffing available to staff it, or at least that's what he expressed. Since then, there have been calls to reopen that facility because the result has been that young offenders are shipped way out of the county, which is a hardship on their family members trying to meet with them, with their attorneys trying to meet with them, et cetera. I know you advocate reopening.
Correct.
Because you mentioned it in your opening statement, Ricky. So what's the barrier to doing that? And why should we reopen that juvenile detention
facility? Okay, the staffing problem came in because they were short staffed at the main jail. And that goes back to retention and recruitment. That's the problem. We cannot, the main jail is where they have to, you have to house. You have to make sure that staffing is correct. So we have to get that implemented and put into place. But I will fight because I know that the juveniles, when the juvenile detention center was opened in Mecklenburg County, it was one of the best in the state. It wasn't a problem of how it was run and the things that they were doing. So when we have something that's the best, you don't get rid of it. You make sure you hold on to it. We have to get back to making sure that juveniles, number one, like I said, those juveniles are getting in trouble in Mecklenburg County. The thing is, we know that most juveniles are getting in trouble are coming from low-income families. Those parents a lot of times cannot afford or have transportation to see that juvenile if they're housed in Mecklenburg County. How can we tell the family to go 3, 4, 5 counties over to see that juvenile? The second thing is when a juvenile is housed, they have to attend court every 10 to 30 days. We would hope that that juvenile is housed in Cabarrus County, but if they're full, they're full. You have to take them somewhere else. So you keep going till you get a vacant bed. Now, also, you need to understand when we do that, you've taken 1 to 2 deputies off the road to transport that juvenile, for instance, to Asheville. Now, when that juvenile has to come back to court, you got to send somebody back to Asheville to get the juvenile, bring them back to Mecklenburg County. When the court case is over, you have to take them back to Asheville. How many times are we doing that? And we're paying for them to be housed in Asheville. They're not staying there for free. So the county's still not getting off the hook as far as money goes. And the thing is, the youth are our focus for tomorrow. They're not in there. We're not in there trying to punish them. We're trying to make them better. But the first thing we do is take the family element out of it. Mm. We can't do that. We got to get back. And I would do everything I can in my power. This is my home. I love Charlotte. I love Mecklenburg County. And I know that I would be doing a disservice to the community by telling them that that's a state problem. And that I don't care about your juveniles, and I'm not going to help you try to get your kids back home and where you can see them.
Same question to you, Rodney Collins.
I believe that Mecklenburg County kids should be housed in Mecklenburg County. I believe that they should be close to their families and support networks. The reality is, from lived Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office experience, is that I was a young captain that ran the Gatlin Juvenile Detention Facility. It was a 30-bed facility. On average, it averaged 12 to 15 kids in that facility at any given time. You had this massive infrastructure of security personnel, nurse, psychologist, programmatic staff, full-time teachers' aides, administrative staff, all built around supporting these kids. And we did a great job at it, only for it to be underutilized in those. So what doesn't go away are the costs per day, the maintenance of the building, the personnel salaries, all the other things that you're required to provide. Something that inherently is not a Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office responsibility. It is the North Carolina Department of Public Safety responsibility to house juveniles. I think it's irresponsible to sit here without absent of any experience in that actual space and say that this is what's good for Mecklenburg County when it was an absorbent cost. So fast forward to 2019 when the incumbent sheriff was advised not to open it. We open it anyway. We go for 3 years only to end the contract at the end of the 3 years for the same reasons that we closed it back in 2009. The costs were astronomical. And then the other unintended consequences, yes, it did impact staffing at JL Central. The other piece to that, too, is that the state requirements to house juveniles is one officer per 8 juveniles. that staffing ratio downtown is 1 to 56. So you see the personnel drain that it has on staffing. Also, we did an exceptional job there as well. That same infrastructure that we had in place for the 16 and 17 year olds before the Raise the Age law took effect was the same one that we put around the juveniles in that same space. We had a wing that was designated for 16 and 17 year olds that we opened under my command, because I was there at the time. I was the facility commander at Detention Center North. I had the annex and I had Gatlin as well. All fell under my purview. So when I talk about costs and looking at their books, because I had to do the annual budget for those facilities that I administrated, that it became a no-brainer, and that in terms of what it cost the citizens to do a non-mandated function for the sheriff's office, it made sense to put the responsibilities where they fall. Would I be willing to advocate to the county board of commission, to the county manager? There are opportunities and space out there that could be used if we could negotiate a contract or something, but it's not the sheriff's office role to do that. I'd be willing to advocate that DPS construct, staff, and operate their own facility somewhere here in Mecklenburg, and I'd be willing to leverage whatever relationships I have to do that.
Last month, a petition was filed by Representative Carla Cunningham and others. She alleged misconduct, extortion, the misuse of resources by the current sheriff, which has led to an SBI investigation that's ongoing. Sheriff McFadden says this is an attempt to smear him prior to an election. In the past, he has, in fact, admitted mistakes in his dealings with personnel and has always denied accusations of mismanagement and retaliation and intimidation of members of the department, despite employee resignations and in which they specifically cited conduct that they found intolerable coming toward them from the sheriff. You worked with the sheriff in that office for a while, Ricky Robinson. What would you do? What would you do to strengthen trust and communication?
Right.
What would you do to strengthen, since it was you, Rodney, I'll start with you.
Yes.
What would you do to strengthen trust and communication between the sheriff's office and the communities that it serves?
It circles back to setting that appropriate example, meaning that not being the target of an SBI investigation because of poor conduct. It means that being intentional about how you lead an organization, setting that example, being a professional. It's important for people to understand and for the voters to realize that these accusations aren't new. The SBI investigation will yield results when you bastardize our promotional process and allow an opportunity for folks that fail the written exam to continue in the process. The written exam, by the way, that consists of your policies, procedures, and general orders, state laws, things that you use to make an informed decision as a supervisor. When you retain people, even though the chain of command has voted for termination because you like them, when you call people racial slurs, when you're constantly belittling people, and then you look at the fact that you've had three of his chiefs that came after me leave in such a negative way, and then you have another chief that's running for office. That should speak a lot.
Perhaps I got this wrong, Ricky, because I know you've been with CMPD for 30 years, but he was with CMPD.
Correct.
As well, so maybe mm-hmm. you worked together.
But correct, we did in homicide.
What would you do to strengthen trust and communication?
First of all, you lead from the front, you lead by example, and I'll tell you that right now, I'm the only candidate that has given up their internal affairs record. Your record tells who you are and what you've done in your career. My record is out there for everybody to see, but don't waste a lot of time because there's nothing there. So if you got 30 seconds, you'll get through it. So I believe that you put your stuff and your experience and your talent and what you've done in the community and the department on the table so that, number one, everybody can see who you are. You know, and when you show that you have always tried to lead with example, exemplary to the community, to the department that you don't believe, and everybody that has worked for you, you have kept and made sure that you held them to those exact standards. If you check any division that I commanded and led, to include tactical operations, homicide, any units that I've led, traffic division, we had the lowest number of any type use of force, no excessive uses of force, lowest number of complaints, and highest number of arrests in the county, because I believe in treating people right and treating people fair, and I hold everybody that works for me to the same level that I hold myself. And I'm not going to go out here and make a bad example, but then expect them to be the good example. So everybody has to be exactly the same. Everybody held to the same standards.
I'm going to give each of you a couple of minutes to tell people why you think you are the best person for this job, and how voters, I would like to hear from you, how you think voters should measure your success once your first term in that office has concluded. Ricky Robbins.
Okay, thank you. What I want the voters to know is that I'm fair, I listen, my record speaks for itself. I've always made sure in my personal and professional life that I've tried to work with and around the community to be fair as I could, and I've always tried to make sure that I work with youth organizations. I've made sure that my talents and experience, I've been a trainer and teacher to law enforcement for over 30 years to make sure that I'm one of the instructors to make sure that we're getting it right, so that when you deal with the police and sheriffs out here, I've taught sheriff academies and police academies to make sure that when those people deal with you, you're getting the best product. I want to make sure that you understand that my priorities are, like I said, number one, it's always going to be safety and security of my staff and the people under my care, because, as I said, no one deserves to get hurt or die in the jail. I strongly believe that I can retain people. I've never had a problem recruiting or retaining people. People will work for leaders who they believe in. People will work for leaders where they believe in changing the culture of where they are, because culture change means a lot. And the third is, like I said, the juvenile detention center is one of my big beliefs, because I will never stop saying that I want to take care of the youth in our community. And I know that this is Mecklenburg County, and Mecklenburg County is home. And I know that we can do the best that we can do. And am I finishing up? This is the end of it?
Yep.
Okay. I didn't know if he's coming back to me. but I just want to make sure that, like I said, that I'm here for you. You can call me. You've always been able to call me. And I always leave with my last two things is, I'm in this to win this. And if you want to win, you need to put Ricky in. Thank you.
Rodney Collins.
So the question was, how do you measure my success at the end of my first term?
And why you're the best candidate.
And
for
why
the job.
I'm the best candidate.
That was it.
So how you would measure my success at the end of my first term would be through data and statistics. We all talk about staffing. So you look at, take a snapshot of what staffing looks like now versus what it'll look like at the end of a four-year term. And you'll see noticeable improvement. You'll see the improvement in jail inspections. You'll see the improvement in how the sheriff's office is intentional about how it serves this community. That's how you'll measure my success at the end of my first term. In terms of why I'm the most qualified, it's simple. 30 years of Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office experience. You don't get promoted four times through three different administrations unless you know a thing or two. I am the most competent, the most qualified, the most credentialed candidate in this race. I am the most prepared in terms of stepping into that role. I've made significant contributions in that actual space over the course of three decades. You can't duplicate that. Anybody can run for office, because the only requirements are be 21 years old, live in Mecklenburg County, and don't have a felon. I check much more of the boxes than that. Thank you. Rodney Collins for sheriff.
That does it for Charlotte Talks today. We'd like to thank Jane Hoffman and the rest of the staff at the League of Women Voters Charlotte-Mecklenburg for helping coordinate this forum. And again, a reminder, if you'd like to read all of Sheriff McFadden's written statement, you can find it at wfae.org/events. Just click on the link for the Sheriff Candidate Forum.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.